Okay, I was asked to talk about Judgment Day, my latest book, and of course we can't even begin to get into it, but we get a little bit of it. I think it's the most important book I've ever written, and a number of generals and colonels retired, Air Force and military of various kinds are endorsing the book, and if you know any retired generals or admirals, let me know who are Christians who might be interested in reading the book. I'd love to send it to them. We're about to go to press for the second printing. In the last hour, we talked, we didn't get very far. We talked about the fact that the Bible is about 28% prophecy. I didn't say it in those exact words, but that's what the Bible is. Prophecy. These are not cheap psychic predictions. These are history-making, earth-shaking events foretold centuries, even thousands of years before they happen, and the whole world has witnessed the fulfillment. Nobody can be an atheist. This is how God says he proves himself to the world. He will tell us what's going to happen before it happens. And when it happens, we will have to acknowledge that he is God. That is God's number one proof. That the Bible is the Word of God and that He is God, that He exists. I can give you many proofs, but that is the one that God Himself gives. We noted that there are hundreds of prophecies in the Bible. There are no prophecies in the Quran, for example. No prophecies in the Hindu Vedas, Bhagavad Gita, Ramayana, Mahabharata, sayings of Buddha, Confucius, you name them. Absolutely unique to this book, okay? You need to understand that. Well, people have tried to make a few predictions. Nostradamus, French quatrains that you could interpret in any way you want. The Bible is very specific, and we mentioned just a few that are being fulfilled in our day. Nobody can deny it. We went to Joel 3, verse 2, for example, where God says, I'm going to punish all the nations of this earth for what they've done to my people, and he gives you two specifics. They've scattered them all over the world. That's anti-Semitism. They've chased them everywhere. That's in fulfillment of a prophecy that God gave through Moses. He said, you disobey me. When he brought them into the land, you disobey me. You will be scattered to every nation on the face of this earth. It happened. We call them the wandering Jew. You will find them everywhere. You will be hated and persecuted like no other people. Okay, so that's been going on for centuries. Number two, God said, I'm going to punish them for dividing my land. And we pointed out, I don't want to go into too much detail, but I think most of you weren't here. I'm just recapping a bit. We pointed out that Israel has never been divided before. Had many enemies, conquered by many enemies. When you conquer a land, you don't divide it. You keep it for yourself. First time in history, Israel has been divided. Began with the British Mandate. When Britain was given the mandate, Declaration of Principles by the League of Nations, 1922, and others that I could cite, declared that this land called Palestine belonged to the Jews. It was to be administered by Britain to see that it became the national home of the scattered Jewish people. Instead, Britain betrayed the Jews. They let in Arabs. They kept Jews out. Even Holocaust survivors in rickety ships, half-sinking ships within sight of the Promised Land, driven back by the British Navy, put into camps. And you can count the demise of the British Empire, on which the sun never sank, Britannia ruled the waves. You can count its demise from the 20s and the 30s when they began to betray Israel. They lost their empire. God said, I will bless those who bless you, and I will curse those who curse you. Better be very careful. If you turn to Zechariah, those of you that have Bibles, chapter 2. In verse 8, see what it says. God says, he that toucheth you, he's talking to Israel, toucheth the apple of his eye. Three times in the Bible, Israel is called the apple of God's eye. There's a lot of anti-Semitism. A lot of people don't like the Jews. Well, why did he choose them? Well, maybe you'd be glad he didn't choose you, because you know what Topol and Fiddler on the Roof says, chosen people. Why don't you choose somebody else? It's just got us nothing but trouble. Because not only are there blessings, but there are curses. And God is as faithful in administering his curses, his pronouncements of judgment, as he is of his blessings that he promises. So Israel is the apple of his eye. And he's going to punish the nations. So finally, Britain divides the land. They gave most of it to Jordan. And UN Resolution 181, November 29, 1947, it is called the partition of the land. And the nations of this world joined to divide up Israel. And Israel ended getting 13% of what they had been promised. And God is angry. The nations of this world are defying God. There are hundreds of promises in the Bible that God has given to his people Israel. And this is the land he's given to them. And the nations of this world have taken it away from them and continue to do so. So you know that every so-called peace proposal, including President Bush's roadmap to peace, so-called, it's a roadmap to Armageddon, I can tell you. What's the basis of every peace proposal? Israel, give them some more land. Give them some more land. They just got pulled out of Gaza, the settlements there. I can tell you I was talking with someone who was there, who was, in fact, he was part of this. These were people in Gaza who really, well, they're Zionists, you would call them. They really believe that God gave this land to them. And some of them were so emotionally overwrought, they didn't have the strength, the physical strength, to pack their bags and to get up and walk out of their houses. The soldiers had to pack their bags for them and had to carry them out. And I can tell you that the soldiers were weeping with these people. But it's something forced upon Israel by the world and forced upon them by a people who call themselves Palestinians, and the world believes that lie. Now, who are the Palestinians? Well, go back to Genesis chapter 12. See, the Bible, look, I don't know what you know about other so-called holy books, religious books, and so forth. You ever read the Bhagavad Gita? You ever read the Book of Mormon? They're myths. When you read the Bible, you begin in Genesis, you find out it's about real people, real places, real events that actually happened on this earth. And you have prophecies about these people, okay? Notice what it says here. Well, we quoted that, verse 3. Well, God says, I'm going to take you into a land. The first thing you learn about Abraham and his descendants is there's a land that he's given them. All right? And I'll bless them that bless thee, and so forth. At the end of verse 3, in thee shall all families of the earth be blessed. That's through the Messiah. How else could it happen? Go down to the end of verse 5. And they went forth to go into the land of Palestine. Into the land of Palestine they came, the end of verse 6, and the Palestinian was then in the land. Is that what your Bible says? They went into the land of Canaan. There never was a Palestinian people, a nation called Palestine, a land of Palestine, Palestinian language, culture, religion, politics. Never. It's a myth. It doesn't exist, okay? Well, you say, yeah, but there are people who call themselves Palestinians, and they do call that land Palestine. How did that come about? In 132 A.D., the Romans, who destroyed Jerusalem in 70 A.D., began to rebuild it as a pagan city dedicated to Jupiter. They began to build a temple to Jupiter on Temple Mount, where the Jewish temple had stood. And you think it upset the Israelis? They were angry. They had an uprising. They were successful for a short while. And the Romans brought in more legions. They destroyed about 1,000 villages. 500,000 approximately Jews were killed. Thousands sold into slavery, chased out of the land. And in anger, the Romans renamed Israel Provincia Syria Palestina. I'm just telling you the facts. And from that day on, everyone living there was called a Palestinian. Who lived there? Jews. You chase them out, they come back. This is our land. God gave it to us. So Jews were called Palestinians. For example, in World War II, and we give you all the documentation in the book about this and many, many other things that are really vital to understand today. For example, in World War II, the British had a volunteer brigade called the Palestinian Brigade. All Jews, not an Arab in it. The Arabs were fighting on Hitler's side, okay? There was the Palestinian Symphony Orchestra, a Jewish orchestra. There was the Palestinian Post, a Jewish newspaper, all right? They called, the Jews were Palestinians, and I give you quotes in the book of Palestinian, I'm sorry, what they call themselves now, Arab leaders who said, there's no such place as Palestine. If they're Palestine, that's a Jewish, that's a Zionist invention. I quote, for example, one of them, Ahmed Shukeri is his name. He's testifying in 1956 to the United Nations. He says, there's no such place as Palestine. If there's any Palestinians, it's those Jews. That's 1956. 8 years later, 1964, Ahmed Shukeri became the founding chairman of the Palestine Liberation Organization. They lie. They change their story. They rewrite history. And I get angry because the world believes it. And that becomes the basis for a so-called peace that the world is going to impose upon Israel with a people who have sworn to exterminate them. And I give you the quotations, dozens and dozens of quotations from Arab leaders, 1948. We're going to come in and we're going to wipe these people out. In fact, it was Ahmed Shukeri who coined the phrase, we will drive them into the Mediterranean. Okay? We were over there in 1967, my wife and I and our four young children, and that's another story. We saw what was going on. We heard them say we're going to exterminate them. And indeed, they intend to. Why must they exterminate the people? Let me tell you something. If the Muslims, and this is Islam now, this is not Arab against Jew, this is Islam. The Arabs and Jews got along quite well before Islam came along. In the 7th century. Why must they destroy Israel? Because Islam teaches that land belongs to the Arabs. What is the rationale for that? Well, Ishmael was the firstborn son. Doesn't the firstborn inherit it? Well, he's an illegitimate child. But nevertheless, they say Ishmael was the firstborn. We're descended from Ishmael. Now, wait a minute. They also claim to be descended from the original Palestinians. Isn't that what they say? Oh, we're descended from the original Palestinians. These Jews are occupying our land that we've inherited from our ancestors way back to the beginning. Well, just think a little bit. I'm sorry, I get a little bit impatient because people don't think. Who was Ishmael's father? Abraham. Where was he from? Ur of the Chaldees. He was a Chaldean. Who was Ishmael's mother? Hagar, Sarah's maid. What was her nationality? She was an Egyptian. So you got a Chaldean father, an Egyptian mother, and when you come into this land, it's already been settled by people called Canaanites, and you claim to be descended from the original Palestinians? And there was no such place? Come on. What a fraud. What a lie. And I said, I get angry. Because that becomes the basis now for a so-called peace that is being imposed upon Israel. All right? So these people must destroy the Jews so long as Israel has one square yard of land over which they have autonomy. It's an affront to Islam. It says Islam is a false religion. Muhammad is a false prophet. Allah is a false god. The Quran is not the word of the true God. Because Islam teaches that belongs to them, to the Arabs, and they will destroy the Jews. Now, I hope you understand what that's about over there. That is not between Arab and Jew. That is between Allah, the God of Islam, and Yahweh, the God of Israel. 203 times in the Bible, the God of the Bible is called the God of Israel. 9 times he's called the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Never is he called the God of Ishmael, or of the Arabs, or of the Americans, or of anybody else. only Israel, and understand that God has tied his integrity to Israel. He has made hundreds of promises of what he's going to do. And the ultimate blessing and the return of these people to this land where he will establish them, and the Messiah will return to rule over them on the throne of his father David. Now, if you think a little bit, you understand. If Israel is destroyed, there is no second coming. Do you understand that? No second coming. I'm not talking about the rapture. We've been raptured. We're safe in heaven. But Satan has this world. The purpose of the second coming is to do what? To destroy Antichrist. To rescue Israel in the midst of Armageddon. And for the Messiah to take the throne of his father David. No Israel, no second coming. Furthermore, Satan has won his battle with God because he has proved God to be a liar. God made hundreds of promises about restoring these people, and he has failed to fulfill those promises. The moral ground has been pulled out from under God. He can't punish Satan because he's been proved to be a liar himself. You understand the importance of what's going on over there? Now, we quoted it in the last hour. See if I can find it just very quickly. Shocked some people. D. James Kennedy. Some of you may have read some of his books. And I probably have forgotten where this is again. But anyway, it'd be very easy. Why don't I just go to the index and look it up, which I had to do in the last era. You'd think that I could remember, wouldn't you? If you wrote a book, you'd think you would know where things are. But it's a big book, and it's got a lot of stuff in it. Okay. Page 243. That's where I thought I was looking. But I didn't see it. Let me find it. And if you were here the last hour, you'll forgive me for repeating this. But I want you to understand what's going on in the church. You've heard of something called replacement theology, have you? Growing movement in the church. The church has replaced Israel. Israel is finished. The church has all these... But wait a minute, the church was never given a land. They were never cast out of a land. They were never promised they'd be brought back into a land. We're a heavenly people. There's an earthly people. And when you get confused between Israel and the church, your theology will really get messed up. But listen, this is D. James Kennedy. He's the founder, chancellor, president, professor of evangelism at the Calvinistic Knox Seminary in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. And they wrote an open letter, here's the title of it, an open letter to evangelicals and other interested parties. The people of God, the land of Israel, and the impartiality of the gospel. It was signed by some 72 Christian leaders, supposedly great theologians, Bible scholars. Among them, R.C. Sproul, that might be a name that you recognize. He's a replacement theologian, as Condoleezza Rice is. A Christian, but believes Israel has been replaced. So she can tell President Bush, oh, these promises, these prophecies in the Old Testament, they don't apply. Don't be worried about that. Oh, it says that God is going to bring the nations of the world into, and he's going to punish them for dividing the land, and your roadmap to peace calls for a further division of the land. Don't worry about it, President. Israel has been replaced. And those prophecies no longer matter, you see? It's very important what's going on. This is the document. I'll just quote you two sections. Section 6. The inheritance promises that God gave to Abraham do not apply to any particular ethnic group, but to the Church of Jesus Christ, the true Israel. You've got to be kidding. How you could possibly say that and read your Bible is beyond my comprehension. Section 9. The entitlement of any one ethnic or religious group to territory in the Middle East called the Holy Land cannot be supported by Scripture. In fact, the land promises specific to Israel in the Old Testament were fulfilled under Joshua. What? Joshua was 110 years old when he died. Look, here. Turn to 1 Chronicles. I mean, I'm sorry, I do get angry. It's all through the Bible. First Chronicles chapter 16 and see what it says. Verse 14, He is the Lord our God. His judgments are in all the earth. Be ye mindful always of His covenant, the word which He commanded to 1,000 generations. That's a little bit beyond the lifetime of Joshua. Even of the covenant which He made with Abraham, and of His oath with Isaac, and hath confirmed the same to Jacob for a law and to Israel for a covenant that will last until the church replaces them. Is that what it says? For an everlasting covenant that was not fulfilled in the days of Joshua. Now go to Jeremiah 23. And I'm going back over a little bit of the ground we covered last hour. But look at what it says. Fulfilled under Joshua, eh? Verse 7. Therefore, behold, the days come, saith the Lord, that they shall no more say, The Lord liveth, which brought up the children of Israel out of the land of Egypt. That's under Joshua, right? But the Lord liveth, which brought up and which led the seed of the house of Israel out of the north country from all countries whither I had driven them, and they shall dwell in their own land. Whoa. Kennedy, you better read that. You guys that signed that, you better check the Bible again. We could go to Ezekiel 36. Verse 24, For I will take you from among the heathen, gather you out of all countries, and will bring you into your own land. That could only happen after they've been in the land and been scattered out of it, right? But when Joshua brought them into the land, they'd never been there before. Okay? Well, notice what he says. Verse 25, Then will I sprinkle clean water upon you, and you shall be clean from your filthiness, and so forth. A new heart also will I give you, a new spirit, etc. That didn't happen at that time. Go to chapter 37 and verse 25. And they shall dwell in the land that I have given unto Jacob my servant, wherein your fathers have dwelt. They shall dwell therein, even they and their children, their children's children, forever. And my servant David, that is the Messiah, the son of David, shall be their prince forever. Oh, it was all fulfilled under Joshua, died at the end of age of 110. No, this is everlasting. This is forever. You cannot escape it. You've got to be really prejudiced against Israel to come up with ideas like that. Notice these verses. The next one. Moreover, I will make a covenant of peace with them. It shall be an everlasting covenant with them. I will place them, multiply them, and set my sanctuary in the midst of them forevermore. The heathen, verse 28, shall know that I, the Lord, do sanctify Israel when my sanctuary shall be in the midst of them forevermore, and so forth. This is an everlasting covenant. Okay, so now we have a problem over there. Turn back to Genesis 15. It's between a people who call themselves Palestinians, and that's a fraud, and the Jews. There's a controversy over a land, you understand? Now, is that a problem to the world? We went in the last hour to Zechariah 12, verse 2. God said, I'm going to make Jerusalem a cup of trembling to all the nations round about when they're in the siege against Judah and against Jerusalem. We pointed out that never, ever in history were all the nations surrounding Israel united against her. Today they are. First time. What unites them? Islam. They fought one another. They were never united against Israel. Today they are for the first time in history. Another fulfillment of a prophecy for our day. Okay? A cup of trembling. Why? Because Israel's too strong for them. They've attacked Israel and attacked Israel. Sneak attacks. Their terrorism and everything. Israel is too strong for them. So it's a cup of trembling to them. We know in verse 3, I will make Jerusalem a burden around the necks of all nations of this world. Is it a burden? It's the number one problem the world faces. You don't solve the problem of Jerusalem, you got a nuclear holocaust on your hands. I can tell you Israel can launch multi-warhead nuclear missiles from submarines. They have the only viable defense against this, the Arrow 2. Their enemies are arming themselves. Iran, denies, oh, we're not doing nuclear research, and then they have a parade, and they show their weapons, and they say, oh, we can reach Europe and so forth. I can tell you this with full authority, they do not yet have nuclear missiles. They don't have nuclear bombs. Because the moment they do, Israel will take them out. They have no choice, as they did in 1981 with Saddam Hussein's. They can't wait around for the world. They can't wait for the UN. They know that those missiles are being built for one purpose, that is to wipe out Israel. It's a very small country, and now it's getting even more dangerous. The world is against Israel. And we pointed out in the last hour, United States, I'm sorry, people ask, well, is the United States in prophecy? Yes, of course. We just quoted a couple of verses. All nations. I'm going to bring all nations against Jerusalem. You mean the United States would go against them? Aren't we Israel's friend? Not exactly. And we give you, documentation after documentation. I think I mentioned the last hour, 1973, the National Security Administration sent urgent dispatch after urgent dispatch to Nixon. It sat on his desk telling them that there's going to be an Israeli Pearl Harbor. And Nixon would not notify Israel. When that war broke out, the Yom Kippur War, Henry Kissinger went into hiding in the Waldorf Astoria Hotel. And he stayed there incommunicado for 3 days before he called an emergency session of the UN Security Council. I mentioned in the book and give you the documentation. Maybe, I don't know, just out of curiosity, how many of you remember or heard of the USS Liberty? Anybody? Okay, very few. USS Liberty was an American ship that Israel took out of commission. They strafed the decks. They wiped out all their communications equipment. They sent a torpedo into the side, into the communication center below decks. Why? You can go on the web. You got websites of guys who survived that attack, who were on the USS Liberty. They are hot. They are angry. Why isn't there a congressional investigation? They knew. Israel knew. Of course they knew what it was. They flew 9 reconnaissance missions all morning at low level over the USS Liberty. They're saying, guys, get out of here. We don't want to do it, but you're going to force us to. And I quote Admiral Thomas Moore. Admiral Moore is really angry. He says, there were 2 U.S. aircraft carriers within a few minutes by air, and those jets were scrambled. He says, I've talked to the commanders. One of them, the Enterprise, I forget, he names them. I talked to the commanders. They sent their jets in the air to go and rescue the USS Liberty, and they were called back by direct order from the White House. Twice. He's angry. Well, you don't have to be too bright to know what was going on. Israel gives this ridiculous excuse. Sorry, guys, we thought it was a hostile Egyptian ship. Come on. We don't make those mistakes. America accepts this excuse. America got caught with his hand in the cookie jar. Worse than that. And Admiral Moore describes the USS Liberty as the most sophisticated electronic eavesdropping device in the world at that time. What were they doing just off the coast of Israel during the 1967 war, the Six-Day War? Well, they were helping the Israelis. They were soaking up all the military dispatches of Israel, sending them on to a sophisticated or huge British installation, electronic installation on Cyprus, and they were turning it into maps and giving it to the Arabs. What's Israel going to do? Guys, we want you to get out of there, but we can't let this go on. And they took them out. The U.S. didn't protest. U.S. accepted that ridiculous excuse. Sorry, we thought it was a hostile Egyptian ship. Well, there's no other explanation for that. Okay, so has America always been on Israel's side? Sorry. The State Department has been against Israel from the very beginning, and they still are today. Israel is the apple of his eye. Oh, they're over there in sin. 30% of them claim to be atheists. You mean, how could it be? You know those Israelis, they crucified Christ. How could it? You mean to say they're God's people and he's going to bless them and give them this land? Well, if you read your Bible, Paul says all Israel shall be saved. Who is he referring to? He's referring to that one-third of Jews that will be left alive on this earth. The time of Jacob's trouble is coming. Jeremiah 30, verse 7. But Israel will be saved out of it. The worst time that Jews have ever had is yet to come. Two-thirds of all Jews on this earth will be killed. Read it in Zechariah chapter 13. And then, as they're surrounded by the nations of this world, you know, they're tough. They're good, but they're not that good. Christ has to intervene. Why does he have to intervene? He tells you that in Matthew 24, verse 22. He says, except those days are shortened, no flesh will survive. You're going to have a nuclear holocaust that's going to really wipe out, could wipe out this whole world. And Christ will intervene and rescue his people. And Zechariah 12:10 says, they will look on me whom they have pierced. And they will mourn. Those Jews who are left alive at that time will realize, look, this is God. He's the Messiah that we rejected. He's been pierced to the death. He's resurrected. He died for our sins. And all Israel will be saved. That is, all Israel alive at that time. Okay, so what is going on over there? It's not Arab against a Jew. It's Satan against God. Anti-Semitism is satanic. You say, wow, how could you make a wild statement like that? Very simple, folks. You don't have to argue about it. Genesis 3, verse 15. God tells the serpent, the seed of the woman. There's a virgin seed of a woman that's coming, and he's going to bruise your head. He's going to deal you a death blow. He's going to destroy you. Well, Satan, what's he going to do? He's got to stop that person from being born. You read about that in Revelation chapter 12, there's the woman travailing in birth, about to give birth to this son. And the red dragon, remember, is there. Revelation is not just about the future, but it also reconstructs some of the things that happened in the past. You know all the cases. You know what Herod tried to do to kill Jesus. You can go down through history. Satan must destroy the Jews. If he could have destroyed the Jews before the Messiah was born, he's won his battle. There's no Messiah. And we're in his hands, everybody. There's no redemption for mankind. Ah, but the Messiah came and he defeated Satan on the cross. So is that the end? No, of course it's not the end. Because that saves us. We're safe in heaven. But Satan has this world. Because there are hundreds of promises that he would bring these people back into their own land. Okay, now, there's just too much to talk about. But I want you to look at something here. How do we know, and God has proved a liar. He's had the moral ground pulled out from under him, as we mentioned. Unless he brings these people back, and unless he rescues them from the world, and the Messiah returns to reign over them, God is a liar. You understand that? His integrity is tied to Israel. Okay, but now, how do we know that this really happened? How do we know these are their people? It are the ones who inherit the land. Well, Genesis 15, I love this book, the Bible. You cannot escape it. It's fantastic. And he, that is God, said unto Abram, know of a surety that thy seed shall be a stranger. Now, this is the seed that is going to inherit the land, okay? Ishmael hasn't been born yet. Isaac hasn't been born yet. And God is identifying the seed that will inherit this land. How are you going to know who they are? They will be strangers in a land that is not theirs and shall serve them, and they shall afflict them 400 years. Obviously, they're going to be slaves for 400 years. Okay? And In the fourth generation, verse 16, they shall come hither again. I'll bring them back into this land of Canaan. For the iniquity of the Amorites is not yet full. Several reasons why they had to be slaves in Egypt for 400 years. Number one, because the Canaanites were not wicked enough to justify God wiping them out. God isn't going to just kill some people and give their land to Israel. But in 400 years, their wickedness will be so great, like Sodom and Gomorrah, God will be forced in His holiness to wipe these people out. And I will use your descendants, who will inherit the land, to do that. And I will give that land to them, okay? Now, the Arabs claim to be descended from Ishmael. There's no direct descent. Ishmael's seed, they intermarried with the Edomites and with the Midianites, who intermarried with the... oh my goodness, I know the name so well, but I'm trying to talk fast now because I'm running out of time. The Hittites, they were a nomadic people, a mixed group. What about the Jews? 400 years they're isolated in Egypt. They're slaves. They did not intermarry with outsiders. They became an identifiable ethnic group of people who were led en masse into the Promised Land. We know who they are today, okay? The Arabs weren't even a group yet. They became recognized as a group of people in the Arabian Peninsula. Okay, now how do we know that this really happened? I love this book. Turn to Exodus chapter 12. We don't have time to deal with this. You know what Exodus 12 is about? Anybody shout it out for us? It's the Passover. And verse 14. And this day shall be unto you for a memorial, and you shall keep it a feast to the Lord throughout your generations. You shall keep it a feast by an ordinance forever. Is that a prophecy? That's a prophecy. God said, you will always keep the Passover. Do they keep the Passover today? They sure do. About 90% of the Jews, even though they're unbelievers, most of them, atheists, unbelievers, New Agers, they still keep the Passover. I'll give you a couple of examples very quickly, contrasts. You've heard of the goddess Vesta, the sacred fires of the goddess Vesta in Rome, tended by the Vestal virgins back in the days of the Caesars. Their great prophet said, these sacred fires will never, ever go out. Go to Rome and try to find them today. They were extinguished. God says, you'll keep the Passover forever. They keep the Passover forever. The sacred fires of the Zoroastrians in Persia, their great prophet said, these fires will never be extinguished. They were extinguished by the Muslim invasion in the 7th century, okay? God says, you'll keep the Passover. They keep the Passover. Now, what is important about that? Go down to verse 26. I have to be very careful, otherwise I get excited about the Bible. And it shall come to pass, when your children shall say unto you, what mean ye by this service? You shall say, it is the sacrifice of the Lord's Passover, who passed over the houses of the children of Israel in Egypt, when he smote the Egyptians and delivered our houses, and the people bowed the head and worshiped. This Passover is a proof to the world that identifies the people to whom that land belongs. Arabs don't keep it. And I hope you don't keep it, unless you're Jewish. Now, we got Messianic groups trying to get Gentiles to keep the Passover. No, the Passover is a remembrance of the deliverance of your ancestors. And they're not my ancestors, okay? It is proof. How is it proof? Look, let's say, here we are, a small group of people. And let's say we're still under the British. And we say, hey, how about this? Let's start a new tradition. We'll say that July 4th, 1776, we were delivered from the British, and we've been keeping this, celebrating it with firecrackers and flares and so forth ever since. You couldn't start that, folks. People would say, we didn't do it last year. We didn't do it the year before. But if you have an event witnessed by multitudes of people, it is immediately memorialized by a remembrance, and they keep it forever. You know it happened, okay? So we know who the heirs are to that land. Only the Jews keep the Passover. The Arabs certainly don't keep the Passover. Now, God is angry. Whoops, just give me a few more minutes here. Can you do that? Do we get a little grace the second hour? Go back to Ezekiel. Ezekiel 38. Because what is this judgment? I read some of the judgments out of here in the last hour. Let me just find them quickly. God says, wow. If I whet my glittering sword, mine hand take hold on judgment, I will render vengeance to mine enemies and will reward them that hate me. I'll make mine arrows drunk with blood, my sword shall devour flesh. For behold, the Lord will render his anger with fury, his rebuke with flames of fire. And he goes on, it says, the slain of the Lord shall be at that day, from one end of the earth even unto the other, and so forth. Where do we read about that sort of thing? Well, I'll tell you why God is angry. The nations of this world are defying God. God said that land belongs to Israel. The nations of the world have taken it away from Israel. And they continue to persist in making a false peace on the basis of taking even more away from Israel. I'm only telling you, God is angry. There's a judgment day coming. And I believe we're getting very close to it. And I think I can document that in just a few minutes if you give me a few more minutes. All right, read Ezekiel 38, verse 11. Thou, that is Antichrist, shalt say, I will go up to the land of unwalled villages. Woo! I will go to them that are at rest, that dwell safely, all them dwelling without walls and having neither bars nor gates. I can tell you on the authority of the verse we just read. The wall, the fence that Israel is building will come down. And at the time of the attack against Israel, no walls, no bars, because they think they're okay. There is a false peace. Daniel 8:25 of the Antichrist, through peace he will destroy many. And Israel will think, this covenant has been made. The Antichrist has allowed the temple to be rebuilt. That's a whole other story. And Israel thinks, we're okay. He builds that temple, or causes it to be built, not to the blessing of Israel. He is going to put his image in there and declare that he is God and cause the whole world to worship him. And if you don't worship him, you will be killed. Okay? But here, who are these people? End of verse 12. A people that are gathered out of the nations. This is Israel returned to her land, under attack. Go down to verse 16. Thou shalt come up against my people Israel. I will bring thee against my land, that the nations may know me. But now it becomes really frightening. Verse 19. For in my jealousy and in the fire of my wrath have I spoken. Well, I want to read the verse before. Verse 18. Come to pass at that same time when Gog shall come against the land of Israel, saith the Lord God, my fury shall come up in my face. God is angry. And he says, notice what he says, in that end of verse 19, surely in that day there shall be a great shaking in the land of Israel. Now look, I'm in the minority. I speak at a lot of prophecy conferences, and I can tell you that most of my colleagues, so-called prophecy experts or whatever you want to call them, disagree with me. I say, this is Armageddon. Oh no, they say it's a preliminary battle, you know, sometime maybe before the rapture, maybe in the middle. Just listen to the language. The fishes of the sea, the fowls of the heaven, the beasts of the field, and all creeping things that creep upon the earth, and all the men that are upon the face of the earth shall shake at my presence. God is coming back to this earth, and everything, even the creeping things and the fish in the sea, are going to quiver and shake like leaves shaking in the wind in fear of God's anger. He's coming back. And verse 23, thus will I, well, he says, I'm going to plead with them and so forth. That's me going to punish them. Verse 23, thus will I magnify myself and sanctify myself. I'll be known in the eyes of many nations. They will know that I am the Lord. This is not some preliminary thing. This is the grand finale, folks. Go down to verse 7, next chapter. What about Israel? So will I make my holy name known in the midst of my people, Israel, and will not let them pollute my holy name anymore. What? That's got to be the grand finale. That has to be the end, Israel's redemption. Look at verse 22. So the house of Israel shall know that I am the Lord their God from that day and forward. Oh, this is the redemption of Israel. Go to verse 29. Neither will I hide my face any more from them, for I have poured out my spirit upon the house of Israel, saith the Lord God. That's Zechariah chapter 12. I'll pour upon the spirit of supplication. Jesus said to the Jews, you will not see me again until you say, blessed is he that cometh in the name of the Lord. And Israel will be in such desperate straits with all the nations of the world against them. They are going to cry out. 2/3 of the Jews killed. They will cry out for the Messiah. And he will answer that prayer. And he will intervene and rescue them. And they will recognize him. And all Israel will be saved. But look at verse 28. Then shall they know that I am the Lord their God, which caused them to be led into captivity among the heathen. But I have gathered them into their own land and have left none of them any more there. That's Matthew 24, beginning at verse 29. Jesus says immediately after the tribulation of those days, some people say, oh, that's the rapture. No, it's not the rapture. The sun will be darkened, the moon won't give its light, and so forth. He'll send his angels with the sound of a trumpet. They will gather his elect from the four winds. That's Israel, mine elect. We're in heaven. But every Jew will be gathered miraculously back to the land of Israel, and there is not one Jew that will be left anywhere on the face of this earth outside of Israel. They will all be brought back to the land of Israel. It's very clear. This is what God says. Okay, now when is this going to happen? You're going to punish the nations. Go back to Isaiah, and I'm just about done. Just look at a couple other verses. Isaiah 66. So when is this going to happen? Verse 8. Who hath heard such a thing? Who hath seen such things? Shall the earth be made to bring forth in one day, or shall a nation be born at once? For as soon as Zion travailed, she brought forth her children. What's the greatest travail Zion ever had? The Holocaust, 6 million. Zion lost 6 million of her sons and daughters. Without that, Israel would not exist today. It was a momentary twinge of conscience on the part of the nations of this world because of the Holocaust and the part that they had in it. And they had not rescued these Jews. They had turned their backs upon them, and they've got a momentary guilty conscience that causes the nations, United Nations, in 1947 to vote partition of the land and to give Israel the opportunity to be reborn as a nation. As soon as Zion travailed, she brought forth her children. Well, God says, verse 9, shall I bring to the birth and not cause to bring forth, saith the Lord? Shall I cause to bring forth and shut the womb, saith the Lord? I don't think so. We've come a long ways through history. Jesus said, except those days be shortened, no flesh would survive. That's an amazing prophecy of the weapons of mass destruction that we would have today. You didn't wipe out all flesh with bows and arrows and swords and spears. Nobody could understand that. Until our day, we got weapons that can turn this earth into a sterile bit of dust, drifting through space with not even a microbe left. Well, Revelation 13 talks about a man who's going to control all banking and commerce with a number. And you can't hide from him. He'll run you down. You don't take his mark, you can't buy or sell. Who could do that? You couldn't do it until our day with the computers and the GPS and so forth. We rented a car in Germany. They upgraded us. And I don't know if you've been in any cars like this. And they upgraded us with a GPS. You don't even have to tell them where you are. You just punch in the destination. We punch in an address hundreds of miles away. And on, here comes Bambi. Go 100 yards straight ahead to a stop sign. Turn to the right. They know where you are at every moment. And if there'd been a new road that's not on the old map that Bambi is using, you're in a field, turn around and get back. They know exactly where you are every moment. They, who's they? Well, Antichrist has now the technology to know where everybody is. He can run you down, okay? This is prophesied in the Bible. We've come all this way to have these weapons, the technology, and so forth. Israel is in her land. Israel is surrounded by enemies, all united against her. Jerusalem is the number one burden for the world. And I could go on and give you all the things that are... Look, it's all in place on the stage. The curtain is about to rise. And I don't think it's just going to kind of collapse. Well, maybe another 100 or 200 years. No, no. God says, am I going to bring to birth and shut the womb? Mm-mm. We live in a very special day. And I believe it behooves us to understand that day and to witness to people. I sit next to chief executive officers of multinational corporations. I sit next to the top people on airplanes because United Airlines puts me in first class because I fly so many miles. It doesn't cost me anything. And I can tell you, there's not one of them that is not fascinated when you say, you know what's going on in the Middle East? You know what's behind this? I can tell you, it's all prophesied in the Bible. Exactly what's happening, and the Bible tells us where this is going to go. And I'm sorry, I haven't had time to finish the task. But you can get the book. And if you know, we have some generals who've endorsed it. If you know any generals, retired generals or admirals, we'd love to give the book to them and see if we could get some other endorsements from top military people. And I think you might find it would be helpful to give to your friends because the gospel is in here powerfully. You know, one more minute. Look, for example, one of the things I say in the book, how many candidates are there for Messiah? How many candidates do you have? Well, the Bible said where he would be born, when he would be born. But let's go to Daniel 9. The Bible tells you the very day he would ride into Jerusalem, 69 weeks of years from the going forth of the command to rebuild Jerusalem. And Nehemiah chapter 2 tells you it was in the 20th year of Artaxerxes, the month Nisan, when he received the authority from Artaxerxes, the emperor of the world, to rebuild Jerusalem. Well, Artaxerxes ruled from 465 to 425 B.C., The 20th year of his reign is 445 B.C. Start from Nisan 1st, 445 B.C., 69 weeks of years, 483 years, and you come to the April 6th, 32 A.D., the day Jesus rode into Jerusalem. Now, I just ask you a simple question. How many candidates do you have for Messiah? Who else rode into Jerusalem on a donkey, exactly as it said would happen? And who else was crucified 4 days later? Prophesied before crucifixion was even practiced on this earth. Come on, you cannot escape it. We've got all the evidence. But people don't want the evidence. That's one of the problems. I find that most people believe what they want to believe. But you can give people evidence, okay? Well, sorry, I'd love to give you more, but we better stop. Father,